Good morning. It's good seeing you all again. Well, the weather was nice while it lasted. First triple digits is tomorrow. I'm not ready. And by the laugh, neither are you. It was really comforting to hear Alan during our meeting say, as a native Arizonan, that you never actually get used to the heat. So that's, I guess, helpful when I'm suffering. But anyway, it's good to see you all this morning. Thank you to the men for the comments on the table and Ron for leading our songs this morning. Now, if you knew that each year you would be gifted just a teeny bit over $500,000, the stipulation is you have to spend it by December 31st at midnight, what would you spend it on? What would you use it for? You can still put it in a bank account at high interest and accrue wealth, manage it, but it all has to be used by the end of the year. I think all of us, hopefully, would be pretty diligent about that. We would probably look for a good bank account to put that in, or finally pay off those student loans, or pay off the house, get a new car, stuff that we perhaps need. We're not talking about money this morning. We're talking about your time. You see, each of us are gifted exactly 525,600 minutes every single year. How are we using those minutes? Now, to clarify a little bit on that, we actually don't get to use all those minutes to our liking because of that time, we spend about a third of it sleeping. If you take average of 8 hours a night. Hopefully you're all getting 8 hours a night. I know some of you get less, some of you get far more. You high school students are on break. I think you're getting far more. We spend another third working if you're still of the working age. We'll spend 24,000 of that eating and drinking. It's a lot of time. This one's awful. 2,500 of that time we'll be stuck in traffic. Actually, I didn't check for Tucson. We might want to bump that up 500 minutes. So after we take that all out, we still have about a third, maybe, left to use. Turn me to Ephesians chapter 5. It says so on the screen there, but Ephesians chapter 5, we'll be looking at these verses this morning, starting in verse 15. Now, Paul has just gotten done exhorting the Ephesian church to be imitators of God, to live a holy and righteous life, to avoid evil things, to expose the deeds of darkness, he says in the middle part of chapter 5. Not participate, expose them, for it is even disgraceful to speak of those things which they do in secret. And he says all that. He says, because of these reasons, he starts out with that therefore in verse 15, be careful how you walk, not as unwise men, but as wise, making the most of your time because the days are evil. So then do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. I hope we all understand that even by that chart there, that our time is limited. Very limited here. You know, it's funny that to the ungodly person, the person who's not really understood or known Christ yet, they'll say that life is the longest thing you'll ever do. But when we actually understand where we're all going, it's the shortest thing we'll ever do. That should only add to the emphasis of the fact that we don't have long here. I think James says, and this will come up in a moment, we're but a vapor. In the grand scheme of things, it's dropping the bucket. Psalm 90 and verse 12. God through the psalmist there, or the psalmist praising God. In Psalm 90 and verse 12, he's just been praising God about praising Him and exalting Him about His wrath and His goodness and His mercifulness and how He placed and how everything is present before Him. You cannot hide anything from God. In fact, let's start in verse 10 because I think it adds to the point we're trying to make here. He says, as for the days of our life, they contain 70 years. Or if due to strength, maybe 80 years. Yet their pride is but labor and sorrow. For soon it will be gone and we fly away. Who understands the power of your anger and your fury according to the fear that is due you? So teach us to number our days that we may present to you a heart of wisdom. The psalmist is talking about here is like, we have 70 years. If you're lucky, 80. Of course, with medical advancements, probably 90. Once Amazon takes over healthcare, probably 100. It would be great to get 2 days shipping on all your transplants, right? But the psalmist is basically talking about we get 70 years, maybe. And most of that time is spent in our futile pursuits of legacy, wealth, everything we can think of. And the psalmist prays to God, let us know you, let us come to fear you. And that fear in that sense is not be terrified, but to revere, to respect. And help us to number our days. Help us to understand our limited time we have here. Because we always think there's going to be more time. Every student who's gone into office hours the last week of term has always thought they had more time. And then they come in the last minute and try and convince the professor that, can't you round up my F to a C? Doesn't work like that. You don't get to the end of life and stand before God. It's like, can you rewind 10 minutes? Can I get one more shot to obey the gospel? You don't get that. The test date has been set. But you look in Luke chapter 12, we read of a man in this story here, this parable. Now, the parable is dealing with covetousness. I recognize this. But the principle within this parable, I think, applies to the topic we're talking about this morning. But you look here in Luke chapter 12, starting verse 15. This is after somebody has cried out in the odds, demanding Jesus, make my brother give me my portion of the inheritance. So Jesus goes in this parable and he said to them, beware and be on guard against every form of greed, for not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of possessions. And he told them a parable saying, the land of a rich man was very productive. And he began reasoning to himself, saying, what shall I do, since I have no place to store my crops? Then he said, this is what I will do. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all my grains and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years to come. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, you fool! This very night your soul is required of you, and now who will own what you have prepared? So is the man who stores up treasures for himself and is not rich towards God. This man thought, and again it's a parable, but the man thought, I have plenty of time. I can get things right later. I'll work all I can now, and I'll enjoy it later. Maybe I'll get my life right with God. I have time. And if only God came to us individually, with the bluntness that he comes to this individual. I mean, you can almost see him kind of slap him upside the head and says, you dummy, time's out. You're done. Your soul is required of you this very night. We always think we're going to have more time. And oftentimes when we think we actually get the time to do what we know we ought to have, or make amends, or do whatever we need to, it's oftentimes too late. That's a sad place to be in. The person who has waited to the ninth hour to, for example, obey the gospel, and it's too late. They've passed on. I don't want to be that individual on anything, not just obeying the gospel, but the things I know I ought to have done on the day of judgment. To have God point out to me and says, you had umpteenth opportunities to get your life straight, to do the right thing, to be productive, to mend those old friendships, to make amends with your estranged brother. You had the time, and you wasted it. Of course, this goes to the fact that we're never promised tomorrow. In fact, we're not even promised the next hour. Christ could come in the middle of the sermon and save you from listening to the rest of it, and we can all go home. Or we could have another 70 years. We don't know. In James, the fourth chapter, James is actually speaking to this mentality of always thinking we have more time, dealing with the proper mindset we need to have when it comes to our day-to-day walk and our day-to-day affairs. He says in James chapter 4, verses 13 through 15, he says, "Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow, we will go to such and such a city and spend a year there and engage in business and make some profit. Yet you do not know what your life will be like tomorrow. You are just a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and also do this or that." And we all fall underneath this trap. We all fall into this mindset. In fact, just yesterday, a group of friends were together, and we were all talking about, you know, in 3 weeks, we're going to start studying this book, and we're going to start doing this thing, and, you know, in August, we have this trip planned, and we talk like we have more time. I like to think I would still have 60-plus years left. But I could turn left on Broadway this afternoon and get sideswiped and be done. And I'm not trying to harp on this to make us all depressed and say the end is nigh, what's the point? But for us to understand that the time that has been allotted to us is one of God's gracious gifts. It should be viewed as a precious gift that we have. In the same book of James, in the first chapter, verse 17, we're reading a verse there, James talking about, granted, he is talking about temptation and how to combat it. Excuse me. And he is talking to them about not being deceived, that God does not send the evil in this world. God is responsible for the good. God does not tempt because he is not tempted by evil. And he says there in the 17th verse, he says, "Every good thing is given and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shifting shadow." Time is a blessing. Now, if you'll bear with me for a moment, I'm going to try and tell you this story. My great-grandmother's been gone about 6 years now. She had lived a long life well into her 80s. She had obeyed the gospel in her teenage years while living with her grandmother in a one-room shack in New Mexico that had dirt floors and no electricity. She married the love of her life after they met on a Monday. They married Friday. He shipped out for the Pacific Saturday, 1 week. And they remained faithfully married until he died in 2001. She had a full life. And the last Christmas we had together, we would all ask her what she wanted. And she said nothing. She was just so grateful to have one more year with her family. Which at last count, she had, I believe it was 5 children, umpteenth grandchildren, numerous great-grandchildren, I think last count was 62. And then she was finally got to meet her great-great-grandchildren. She understood how precious time is. She was just so happy to be around her family one more year, the one time a year we actually all came in contact with each other. Do we treat time as if it's given, or do we treat it as it's precious? Because we don't know who's going to be here next week, let alone tomorrow. And so because of that, going back to the text of Ephesians, I need to be wise, and I need to redeem my time, because it is so precious. Paul talks there about redeeming the time. Excuse me. That word, redeeming, you have some of the newer translations says making the most of. That older translation says redeeming, that came from the same Greek word of to buy back, to purchase. And the whole idea is we are to purchase the time we have left for our use to the fullest benefit of ourselves and our fellow man. But when you consider all the time we wasted when we were not yet a Christian, we're basically buying back the time against the time wasted. And we are to be wise in our usage of that. I like one quote I read by John Stott on this very text, talking about how Christians are to be sophos, that Greek word, the wise. These are we are practically wise people. We're no fools. He says, certainly wise people know that time is a precious commodity. All of us have the same amount of time at our disposal, with 60 minutes in every hour and 24 hours in every day. None of us can stretch the time. But wise people use it to the fullest possible advantage. They know that time is passing and that the days are evil. So they seize each fleeting opportunity while it is theirs, for once it has passed, even the wisest people cannot recover it. Despite our time zones, and you may be getting a 25th hour if you're flying across time zones, enough of them, you still have the same amount of time as everybody else. Can't stretch it, can't make it go faster. So how are we using it? Hopefully we're using it to the fullest extent. I touched on this in just a moment ago, but looking in 1 Peter chapter 4, Peter talking about our time in sin, it really doesn't matter how long you spent not a Christian. Whatever that time was, Peter said that was more than sufficient for you to carry out the desires of this world. He says in 1 Peter chapter 4, looking at the first three verses, he says, therefore, since Christ has suffered in the flesh, arm yourselves also with the same purpose, because he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin, so as to live the rest of your time in the flesh no longer for the lust of men, but to the will of God. For the time already past is sufficient for you to have carried out the desires of the Gentiles, having pursued a course of sensuality, lust, drunkenness, carousing, drinking parties, and abominable idolatries. I don't know if it was 15 years, 20 years, 50 years. However long it was you outside of Christ, Peter's basically saying, that was plenty of time. That was more than sufficient for you to figure out what that kind of life is like. So you need to make the most of what you have left. And I think the wisdom writer in Ecclesiastes gets to that. In Ecclesiastes chapter 9, once I can find it here. Ecclesiastes chapter 9, we'll be looking at verse 10 here. Whatever we find ourselves doing in our life, no matter what the opportunities come to us, the wisdom writer exhorts us to make the most of that time. He says here in the 10th verse, whatever your hand finds to do, do with all your might. For there is no activity or planning or knowledge or wisdom in Sheol where you are going. Ecclesiastes, I think, gets a bad rap sometimes. Of the wisdom literature, it tends to be the more negative. But actually, if you look at it differently a little bit, Ecclesiastes is really just talking about your time here is short. It is limited. So enjoy the good gifts that God has given you, be it time, your possessions, whatever God has blessed you with. Enjoy it to the fullest extent and use it for God's glory. Because your days are numbered. So whatever you find, whatever opportunity comes before you, seize it. You're not guaranteed another. So we need to spend time on things of real value. There's so much in this world that the world places value on. The high-paying career, fame, being popular, being accepted. None of that matters in the long run. I could ask you right now what matters in your life, and I would hope there would be some commonality between all of us. I hope some of those would be, at least two of them would be my faith and my family. And hopefully a third one would be helping my fellow man or my brothers and sisters. But you consider for a moment that no one is remembered for how many hours they worked. No one's remembered for how many years they spent in a company. That is, in the long run of things. After 40 years and you retire, they might give you a nice clock that has an honor of 40 years of service to the company, but once you're gone, who actually remembers your name? And in fact, when it comes to preaching, I came across a quote from my book on Ecclesiastes that I'm going to have sent on my desk, and some may find it morbid, but the quote is, "Preach the gospel, die, be forgotten." That's all I hope in this life to be. Because it's not about me, it's about the Word. Spending the time in God's saying. So when people think back, oftentimes at funerals, I've been to enough of them that what gets commentated on is how much they love their family, how much time they spent helping others. If they were a Christian, oftentimes their faith is held up as an example. I have yet to be at a funeral where the one giving the sermon talk or reading the eulogy goes, "And John Smith was an honorable man who worked for 40 years at Harbor Freight in Toole." That doesn't get said. It doesn't get said how many hours he worked overtime and how many baseball games he missed of his son. In Ecclesiastes 2, for example, 1 through 11, it's a lengthier reading, but the wisdom writer gives a warning don't waste time pursuing the things that don't actually matter in this life. Ecclesiastes 2, we'll read a little bit here. He said, "I said to myself, come now, I will test you with pleasure. So enjoy yourself, and behold, it too was futility. I said of laughter, it is madness, and of pleasure, what does it accomplish? I explored with my mind how to stimulate my body with wine, while my mind was guiding me wisely and how I could take hold of folly, until I could see what is good there is for the sons of men to do under heaven the few years of their lives. I enlarged my works, I built houses for myself, I planted vineyards for myself, I made gardens and parks for myself, I planted them in all kinds of fruit trees. I made ponds of water for myself, which to irrigate a forest of growing trees. I bought male and female slaves, and I had home-born slaves, and I possessed flocks and herds larger than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. Also, I collected for myself silver and gold and treasures of kings and provinces. I provided for myself male and female singers and the pleasures of men, many concubines. Then I became great and increased more than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. My wisdom also stood by me. All that my eyes desired, I did not refuse them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure. For my heart was pleased because of all my labor. And this was my reward for all my labor. Thus I considered all my activities, which the hands had done, and the labor which I exerted. And behold, all was vanity, striving after the wind. There was no profit under the sun." Now the wisdom writer will end his book at the end. It will say in the 12th chapter, "When all is heard, the conclusion is this, to fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the duty of every person." But this is a man who tried it every which way. Everything that he thought would bring meaning and pleasure in this life, he's done it. And he's here to tell us all, in case we're still not convinced, it's just striving after the wind. It's not worth your time. Sure, work your job. Do to the fullest extent of your being. But don't become so preoccupied with the things of this life that you lose out on the things that matter. Just one example, the Hebrew writer exhorts the Hebrew Christians in the 12th chapter and the 14th verse. In Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 14, the Hebrew writer talks to them about following after Jesus' example and things that are actually worth pursuing in this life. This is just one example. He says there in verse 14, pursue peace with all men and the sanctification which no one will see the Lord. Being right with God is worth my time. Being with my brethren is worth my time. Being with my family, my faith, those things that add to that, the lasting things, the things that have eternal consequences, that is worth my time. Working 20 hours of overtime this week, I'm not sure that's worth my time. You know, or wasting, watching football on a Sunday instead of being with the Lord's people is worth my time. Because we do live in a world that will zap your time. We have all this automation going on. And I don't mean in the factories. If you've actually started noticing, a lot of stuff that used to be done by people in previous generations has now been outsourced to you and me. Self-checkout at Safeway is an example. You're bagging your own groceries now. You're checking yourself out. This is one for me from Oregon because it's still illegal up there to pump your own gas. I know, it's a crazy state. But there used to be full-service gas stations. This is two examples of how much the world is outsourcing to you and me that's zapping up our time. We don't think anything of it going through the self-checkout line, but that's a minute or two just by yourself, no human interaction, that's gone. So much is being zapped from us, and so that time that we actually have left gets smaller and smaller and smaller. Am I using it to the fullest extent? Because as the Ephesian writer talks about, the days are evil. And this gets to a concept I want to talk about. Are we spending time, or are we managing our time? And this comes from financial philosophy, I guess it would. Do you spend your money, or do you manage your wealth? And spending money is just, check the bank account, I have it, I'm going to buy it. I'm not thinking, there's no budget, I'm not considering long-term financial goals of retirement or trying to get a house or anything else like that. I have it, must spend it. Managing is the opposite of that. I have a budget, I'm following it, I'm working towards long-term financial goals. Now applying that to our time, am I just killing time here, letting all the outside forces dictate what I'm doing this day? Or am I in control of my time and I have set priorities for the day, then nothing is going to change that. You know, I think a great example would be for committed Christians. You already have two of your top three priorities on a Sunday. Assembling with the Lord's people. So important it's on there twice. Nothing else should get in the way of that. Nothing. Sure, things may come along, emergencies may happen, and that may get in the way, yes. But, a buddy of yours comes in from town, is only here for Sunday, and says, hey, let's do breakfast. I can't. You're all welcome to join me. We can do lunch. That's managing your time. You're in control. Your time's not in control of you. Because, again, as the Ephesian writer talks, as Paul talks about Ephesians, the days are evil. Time is not on our side, unfortunately. And at the end of this life, I don't want to say I spent too much of my time on things that didn't matter. Being unproductive is one. Because even Christians can fall underneath this trap. I like what one writer said. He said, we need to carefully watch the uses of our time because we live in a world that will gladly waste our time and live our lives for us. Television is a great example of the world wasting our time. But look in Matthew chapter 25 just for a moment here. In Matthew 25 here, verses 14 through 18. Parable of the talents here, we're just going to read a small excerpt. It says, for as like a man, in verse 14, about to go on a journey, who called his own slaves and entrusted his possessions to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, each according to his own ability. And he went on his journey. Immediately the one who had received the 5 talents went and traded with them and gained 5 more talents. In the same way, in the same manner, the one who received 2 talents gained 2 more.
But the one who received one talent went away and dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. Now we know how that story ends. The master comes back, the first two are rewarded, the last one is rebuked and cast out. The talents can, oftentimes we use the talents for our abilities and so forth, but I think we can put time in there as well. How are we using the time that God has given us? It's like the hymn we sing from time to time. I believe it's Into Our Hands is the hymn. I don't remember the number. But in the chorus it goes, how are we using God's precious moments? It talks about what are we going to reap at the end of time. Am I going to be like the five and the two talent man and maximize my time here, using it for the good of others and myself and my faith and my family in service of God? Or am I going to be like the one talent man and just sit on it, let it dissipate? The Hebrew writer talks about, and this is rebuking Christians there in the fifth chapter, that the time passed for them was sufficient, that they ought to have been teachers by this point. But they had need again for somebody to reteach them the elementary principles. They were being wasteful with their time. And they were rebuked for it. Did I spend too much of my life worrying about cheap things? In Luke, the 18th chapter, in the parable of the sower there, in verse 4. Luke 18 and verse 4. Excuse me, that is not correct. I believe that was a typo. Think in your minds for a moment the parable of the sower. When it talks about the seeds sown upon the thorny ground, these are the individuals as they walk on the way after they have heard the word. This word is choked out by cares and worries of this life. You know, be it your job, what you're going to eat, drink, clothe yourself with, politics, what's happening in the world. All of it can be weeds that choke out the things that matter in this life. And when I get to the end, I don't want to be there and looking back saying I spent too much of my time worrying about that. And as we close here, I don't want to look back and say I spent my time working on unimportant things. Looking in Luke chapter 10, verses 38 through 42. Luke chapter 10, verses 38 and 32. Reading about Martha and Mary when Jesus was in their home. And it says, now as they were traveling along, he entered the village, and a woman named Martha welcomed him into her home. She had a sister called Mary, who was seated at the Lord's feet, listening to his word. But Martha was distracted with all her preparations, and she came up to him and said, Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to do all the serving alone? Then tell her to help me. But the Lord answered to her and said, Martha, Martha, you are worried and bothered about so many things, but only one thing is necessary. For Mary has chosen the good part, which shall not be taken away from her. Now, from what we know of the other scriptures, in John's account when Jesus went to Lazarus' funeral, Martha, Mary, and Lazarus were all siblings. By the way Mary conducts herself with the Lord, it seems that they had known each other for at least a little bit. Perhaps even when the Lord had no place else to stay, Martha's home was still open to him. And we could say, and we can commend Martha for a little bit, actually. She's practicing good hospitality. She's trying to do her best to prepare a meal for the Lord. But she is so preoccupied with making it absolutely perfect and going above and beyond for the Lord, she has lost sight of what was in front of her. As the Lord said about Mary, she had lost sight of the good thing, which was the Lord's teaching. Mary was commended for her choosing the good thing. And again, Martha, honestly, is a very productive kind of woman. She's a realist, too. at Lazarus' funeral when Jesus shows up 3 days late and wants to remove the door from the tomb, Martha's the one who says, "Lord, the body's been dead for 4 days. It's going to reek, even in the midst of her own mourning." And so the Lord says, "No, let me go in there anyway." But the lesson is, even for Christians, and I think this is the verse that would hit home for most of us, is we can get so distracted actually in the good things or the things we think that are good, but really are unimportant. If you'll bear with me for a moment, if I might read into the text a little bit. I'm sure we could equally have read, or Jesus could equally have said, "Martha, you're so preoccupied with making this great meal when sandwiches would have been sufficient." We sometimes convince ourselves and exert ourselves in doing what are normally good things when a simple sandwich would suffice. Martha definitely would have lived by the phrase, "Anything worth doing is worth doing well." But that's the phrase my mom lived by, and still does. She would hire a cleaning lady once in a while, and the thing that never got me was we had to deep clean before the cleaning lady showed up. But anything worth doing is worth doing well. But I think Jesus would say anything worth doing is worth doing simply. Because even Martha, in the midst of her preparing, and sure, say the meal got off without a hitch, and it's a multi-course meal, she is going to be so preoccupied setting up the next course that she will have no time to visit with the Lord. Unfortunately, many Christians, when we get busy in the world, with things that are near good nor bad, just busy, the first thing that goes is our time with the Lord. So to end as Paul did in Ephesians, we need to redeem our time, be careful how we walk, because the days are evil. And because of this fact, let's not be act as fools, wasting our time, but wisely managing it, making the most of every opportunity, because time is so precious. So precious. And we never have enough. If you want to turn to Acts chapter 22, because tomorrow's not secured and our time is limited, making the most of every opportunity. If you're not yet a Christian this morning, I can't guarantee you you're going to make it out of the parking lot alive. I can't guarantee you you'll have another opportunity to obey the gospel. This may be your one and only chance. A man by the name of Saul, who would later be named Paul the Apostle, understood this. In Acts 22nd chapter, starting verse 12, this is after he's been stricken blind, and he's a man by the name of Ananias has come to him. He says, "A certain man, Ananias, a man who was devout by the standard of the law, and well spoken of by all the Jews who lived there, came to me, and standing near, he said, 'Brother Saul, receive your sight.' And that very time I looked up at him. And he said, 'The God of our fathers has appointed you to know His will and to see His righteous one and to hear an utterance from His mouth. For you will be a witness for Him and to all men of what you have seen and heard. Now, why do you delay? Get up and be baptized, washing away your sins, calling upon His name.'" Saul took the opportunity. He obeyed that very hour. Or you can think in Acts chapter 16 with the Roman jailer. His life was spared that night. He was going to kill himself, and Paul says, "No, we're all here." He was not only given a second chance on physical life, but then he was told the words to enter eternal life. If you're here this morning and not yet been obedient to the gospel, Acts chapter 22 made it pretty simple. But the words of Jesus in Mark 16, verse 16, "He that believes and is baptized shall be saved. He that believeth not shall be condemned." If you've done that in the past and you've fallen away and need to be restored to the faith, or you're struggling spiritually, Make your need be made known now. See how we stand and sing the song that has been selected.
All things are